welcome to the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. This is Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and in today's installment, we're going to talk to someone who will be able to give you a little more information on your family's untold story through some of the family heirlooms that you might have in your attic or basement or even in a corner that you're putting stuff on. But those items have history of their own. And coming up here in the Central Minnesota area, professional antiques appraiser Mark Moran is coming to town to host a number of appraising events at various branches of the Great River Regional Library System. And Mark is joining me on the phone today to talk a little bit more about these events and what he does to make the appraisal process a fun and entertaining performance. So, Mark, welcome to the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Now, you're going to be coming to town here shortly, visiting some of the Great River Regional Library System branches. And can you tell us what program you're bringing and maybe where this originated from?
Sure, you bet. Well, first I have to thank the folks at Great River Regional Library System for bringing my antique appraisal events to the St. Cloud area. I've been doing these programs all over the Midwest now for over 5 years, and they've been just wildly popular. Already for 2016, I have about 120 of these programs booked. But in the week in May, from May 16th to the 20th, I'll be doing two programs a day for 5 days in a row. And each of these events is a three-hour program of appraisals of antiques and collectibles. And the libraries include Cold Spring, Uppsala, Rockford, Becker, Cokato, Annandale, Painesville, Sauk Center, and Buffalo, that's going to be in conjunction with the Wright County Historical Society, and finally Waite Park. So all of these library branches have information on the programs, on the accepted and excluded categories, and folks are encouraged to call the library, sign up for the program, and you know, bring out some of their antique and collectible treasures. And this is antiques appraisal as theater. So there's an audience is always welcome. We have a lot of fun. I try and make it a great and entertaining and educational program.
Nice. So what's your background in antiques then? What kind of brought you into, developing a show, I guess you could say?
Sure. Absolutely. Well, you know, like many people, I began as a collector, back in the 1970s. In the 1980s, I became a part-time antique dealer, and my full-time job was, I was a newspaper man. I was an editor and a reporter for papers in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and then later in Rochester, Minnesota for 30 years. And then in the 1990s, I began writing antique reference books part-time, and I quit the newspaper business to write books full-time in 2002, and I've written 27 books on various antique and collectible categories, They were very, very popular in their day. The books themselves are all out of print. So the books I wrote on antiques and collectibles have themselves become collectible, which is not anything I ever expected to have happen. I also have been an editor for antique papers, Antique Trader magazine. I've been a contributor to Maine Antique Digest. I produced an antique show out in Atlantic City, New Jersey for a while. I was also senior editor of antiques and collectible books for Krause Publications in Iola, Wisconsin, which is where I live now. And so my experiences in the antiques trade over the last 30, 40 years have given me lots and lots of great contacts in the business, and I've also been able to stock up a lot of good information on histories and usage and values, so the programs that I put on at libraries, historical societies, senior communities all around the Midwest have been just wildly popular, and I think part of the reason for that is that people like the fact that at my programs, this is not a shopping trip for me. Mm-hmm. I'm not out to find a bargain and turn around and sell it and make money on it. That's what an antique dealer does. Then there's nothing wrong with that. I am an appraiser only. The programs that I do and the house calls that I make are all that I do. And so when I'm coming to town and folks with big things or fragile things or a lot of things, when they find out I'm going to be in the area, some folks ask me to come out to the house to look at their collections of antiques and collectibles. And that's been a very popular option. And it also, these home visits at $75 an hour help me to pay for the gas and the food and the hotels for my travels. And it also makes the program more affordable for my hosts. So, you know, on the one hand, you have the appraisal as theater part, and on the other side, you also have the home visits. So I'm kept pretty busy with these events.
Nice. And yeah, that is one of those things. If somebody has something, and I bet you run into this every once in a while, you know,
sure.
Somebody has a collection or somebody has, or say they've got like a pool table that they inherited, they're not going to
exactly.
bring that into the library.
No. And so I'm happy to come out to the house. We do a walkthrough visit and the funny thing is though, most people don't care what their treasures are worth. They just want to know if the stories that they've heard, you know, all their lives about, you know, Aunt Sally's table lamp or Uncle Henry's rocking chair. They just want to know if the story they've heard is true. And sometimes it is, and sometimes as it goes from one generation to the next, the story grows in the telling. And so sometimes I have to clear up some misconceptions about antiques and collectibles, but oftentimes I'll hear on a home visit, people will say, well, maybe we don't want to sell it now, but we just don't want the kids to put it out at a rummage sale for a buck. And you know what? They would too. There has been a really profound change in collecting habits and patterns over the last 20 or 30 years, which is not to say that there are still not, you know, wonderful antiques and collectibles to be had out there. In fact, if anything else, if nothing else, this is a great time to buy because there are many, many affordable antiques, art, collectibles that are out there on the market.
Yeah, there are those, you could call them trinkets, you could call them just about anything, but
sure.
Sometimes it's surprising that this thing you've just had sitting around is actually worth money. You know, a lot of times people don't know what they have.
That's very true. And you know, the service that I provide of you know, looking at not only the values, but also the history and the usage and the design influences, things like that, it really provides a lot of background on many, many antiques and collectible categories. And also in my program, I show up and I have my laptop, and I also have a 32-inch flat screen monitor that I use in my events. So as I'm using the various databases online, people can see the various items that I'm looking at, and they can see the values right on the screen. It's not like I'm pulling these numbers out of the air.
Mm-hmm.
I rely on current auction values. It's not in the antiques trade, there's the talking price and then there's the walking price. And exactly. And when it walks out the door, when someone reaches into their pocket and takes out money and hands it to someone else, that's when the value of an object is established. Now, sometimes that moment, that value can pass very quickly. But the databases that I use online and the information that I'm able to draw on from my years of experience provide a good solid basis for value and also history and usage and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's on one hand, you know, you're an expert in your field, but then you're able to back that up with data, with, just the research, and with, well, why are you an expert in your field? And you know where to look for these things.
That's absolutely right. And, back in 2011, when I started these programs, I was working for my publisher, which is Krause Publications, here in Iola, Wisconsin. And one day I went into work, and they said, hey, thanks, Mark, for all your efforts. By the way, be careful there when you go out the door. Don't let it hit you as you're leaving. And so I was one of five people that were downsized that day. And it didn't come as a complete shock. The market for antiques and collectibles books had changed, quite dramatically, in the last 15 or 20 years. And even though my books had all been, very popular and had, and sold well, they decided from a business standpoint that it was time to make a change. So I had to figure out what to do with all of this knowledge that I had accumulated over the years. And it occurred to me that perhaps a one-man, version of Antiques Roadshow might be the way to go. And so I started contacting libraries and historical societies, and the response was instant and enthusiastic. And so now I do about 120, 130 of these programs every year, traveling from as far north as Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, and as far south as Hannibal, Missouri, and with stops in between, and all over Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois, and Michigan. That's mainly my area. But just in the last couple of years, the response from Minnesota has been really overwhelming. Not only the Great River Regional System in central Minnesota, but also Washington County, Anoka, Scott, Dakota County as well, southeastern Minnesota, Cannon Falls, that area. I'll be in Rochester and Austin this summer as well. So lots of wonderful dates coming up in Minnesota.
Well, what do you think that is with the increase in interest, especially here in Minnesota? Is it maybe one of those things where, people are looking around and seeing things and going like, well, what is this? Or is it right. Maybe the popularity of other things, or is it just the internet?
Well, I think of course the internet has an impact on all of our lives in one way or another. But there are so many people in their 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s who are looking around and looking at a life's worth of accumulation of treasures and antiques and collectibles and fine art and things like that, and trying to figure out what to do with them. And how to distribute them equitably among children or grandchildren, nieces and nephews, and so I think the idea for a traveling appraisal program that I do was just an idea whose time had come, because there are so many people who have done exactly what my wife and I have done, is that accumulate a house worth of stuff. And I was visiting with a couple down in Racine, Wisconsin, down south of Milwaukee there, and the husband said, we spend our lives collecting all this stuff, but we never think about what we're going to do to get rid of it down the road. And so that kind of stayed with me, that comment about what are we going to do with all this stuff. And so oftentimes if people do have things that they want to sell, I'm happy to point them in the right direction. It may be something that they can sell on eBay or on Craigslist. It may be something that they can consign to a good local or regional auction house. Maybe they can just sell it right out of the garage, a garage sale or a rummage sale. Or the other option is that I'm lucky enough to be a member of the appraisal gang on Antiques Roadshow.
Mm-hmm.
And so because I'm part of that crew, and I'm very lucky and very grateful to be part of it, and I'll be back on the tour in 2016, I'm able to contact my colleagues for information, and also to help folks sell things that have come into my programs over the years, and also things that I've found on house calls have gone on to sell for thousands of dollars in at auction. And so that's another great perk about attending one of my programs, is that I have some pretty good contacts.
You're in tune to the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota on 88.1 FM KVSC. And today we're talking with antiques appraiser Mark Moran, who will be coming to the area for a variety of appraisal performances at the Great River Regional Library System Branch Libraries during the week of May 16th. So, Mark, as we get back into it, what are some of the more interesting things you've run into over the years doing this appraising?
You know, it ranges from the things that come into my programs range from, fine art, furniture, and you had mentioned the pool table earlier. Now, people, mm-hmm. if people do have big pieces of furniture that they wonder about, they can take good, sharp, clear digital photos, send them to me by email, and then we can still look at them at the program. I can pull them up and look at the attachments, and we can appraise things that way at the programs. Ceramics, glassware, vintage photographs, cabinet cards, daguerreotypes, things like that. Old advertising, folk art, that would include, carvings, even things like quilts, homemade items, toys. Oh, my goodness, I see so many wonderful tin toys and dolls and games from going back 100 years or more. Clocks. It's a very rare program for me not to have at least one good old oak kitchen or kitchen clock or mantel clock at my programs. Costume jewelry is another category. Costume jewelry is still a pretty strong market. There are some caveats in there, but I see a lot of costume jewelry, musical instruments, guitars, other string instruments, violins, old books. I have a special database that I use just for old and collectible books, and even things like sporting memorabilia, baseball cards and signed balls and that sort of thing. But to your point, to your question, I was on a home visit way up in northern Wisconsin near Clam Lake. I'm sure that there are folks from Minnesota who have places in that area around Cable, Hayward, that very popular resort area. And I visited the lady, and she had a collection of items that she had gotten from an elderly aunt, and she'd had these things for years and years. And I was looking through all the stuff, and most of the things I see are just stuff, and they're nice things. They have sentimental value,
and they're
have
cute.
Decorative value, but not always great monetary value. And I was walking past this bookcase, and in the bookcase I saw these bookends, and I said, "What about those?" And I opened the case, and there were a pair of bookends, bronze, in the form of storks, and the storks were perched on marble bases, and the long beaks were laid down on the storks' breasts, and the beaks were actually made out of ivory. So you had bronze figures of storks, nickel plated, by the way, very unusual, and sitting on marble bases with ivory beaks. And it turns out that those were the works of a pretty well-known French artist from the 1920s. They were very Art Deco. And the last pair of those that I could find in my internet databases had sold at auction at Sotheby's for $12,000. This woman had no clue that they were that valuable. She was going to give them to her grandson to take with him to college to use on a bookshelf in his dorm room.
Oh yeah.
They're now sitting in a safe deposit box in the ladies' bank. So you just never know what you're going to find on these visits.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I've got to ask, have you ever run into something that somebody has brought in or had you show up and it turns out to be, I don't know, either historic or otherwise, but has anybody ever brought something to you that's been like illegal?
That's a good question. And the market for just to give you an idea, an example, the market concerning and the laws concerning the buying and selling of and ownership of ivory have changed dramatically just in last year or so.
Yep.
And so I see many, many ivory objects, and not just Asian, not just Chinese and Japanese, but also Inuit, the native peoples from Alaska, what we used to call them Eskimos, and now they're the Inuit. African ivory, of course, and not just from elephants, but also warthogs, other creatures like that. Also walrus ivory, and so the laws concerning this have changed dramatically, and I'm all in favor of that. People in the antiques trade, some of them, are all up in arms saying, oh, this is going to, hurt our ability to buy and sell, ivory objects. Well, you know what? That's too bad. If this is contributing to the slaughter of animals just for their ivory, or in the case of rhinoceros, for instance, or for their horns, anything we can do to help stem that slaughter is a good thing. But the funny thing is, people will bring in, for instance, whale teeth that have been decorated in some way or another, and they call that scrimshaw. And quite frequently, someone will bring in something that they think is a real whale's tooth, and in fact, it's faux ivory. It's resin made in a mold and then decorated with ink. So the bad news is it's not a real whale's tooth. But the good news is that they can sell it without worrying about running afoul of any conservation laws. So that happens quite frequently.
Yeah, definitely things change over the years, and then all of a sudden that changes everything for everybody. So
That's very true. And it's not just wildlife art. There was a time a couple generations ago where many of the black memorabilia pieces that are completely objectionable and politically incorrect today were very common in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, even the 60s, depicting black cartoonish characters. And I'm thinking now of, Amos and Andy, for instance.
Yeah, it's like they're in blackface or they're little jockeys holding
lawn jockeys and all kinds of things like that. But those are still very collectible. And in fact, the great Alan Page, a former Minnesota Viking great and Minnesota Supreme Court justice, has been a longtime collector of black memorabilia. So when people bring these things into my programs, sometimes they're a little bit uncomfortable, discussing how they acquired them or their history of ownership. But you know what? If nothing else, they remind us how far we have come and how far we still have to go. And so I'm glad to see these items and talk about their values. But you know what? That brings up another point of things that I cannot appraise and do not appraise. And I just wanted to run down those, if I may.
Oh, for sure.
Weapons, guns, swords, knives. Those things are not acceptable in my programs. Traps, like leg hold traps, I don't appraise those. Coins and paper money, that is a language that I do not speak. It's such a huge area, and there are so many great resources out there. That and fine jewelry. We talked earlier about costume jewelry, but fine jewelry, gold, diamonds, rubies, precious gems, That's a life study. So that's not an area that I cover. And lastly, Nazi memorabilia and Beanie Babies. Those are, I hate to pair those together.
I know, I was like,
you know,
really?
Those are the last two categories that I do not do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that got me there. I had to stifle a little laugh. I was like,
that's
really?
Okay.
Oh, it makes, you know, you think back at all the things that have been collected over the years. I mean, you just kind of pay attention to that, even if you're, you know, not really, really into it. But, you know, like Cabbage Patch Dolls, Beanie Babies, the Star Wars things, all of those things. You know, people collect and people have these things. So
absolutely. And, you know, it's funny, when a collector community grows up around an item or a group of items whose values have dropped dramatically. And people always ask, well, why have the values of antiques and collectibles declined so much? And mainly because the quality of the reproductions are so good. If someone just wants a look in their home, and they don't care about the age or the origin or the materials or the design influences or anything like that. They just want something that looks good. They can go to a million places online or Pier One or Pottery Barn and buy something that will cost more than what the real antique would cost them. But there's no hunt. You know, there's not much effort needs to be expended. When I started out in antiques back in the 1970s, the hunt was the most fun part of the whole thing. In fact, sometimes when you finally found the thing that you were hunting for, it was anticlimactic to all the fun you had to get there. You know, all the crazy people you meet in the antiques trade, the you know, collectors and dealers and going to auctions and flea markets and rummage sales and standing outside in the blazing sun and the pouring rain and being part of a collector community. That was a lot of fun. And a lot of that is missing today. So I hope that if nothing else, people who come to my antiques appraisal events will experience, you know, some of that community again, that they will be part of a group of people who love these things. You know, I don't tell anyone, but I have more fun than anyone else at my programs. So I hope people will join us when I'm in the St. Cloud area for these events.
Okay, one last question before we go.
Sure.
What's the difference between a couch and a Davenport?
Well, that's a good one. You might also have said settee or sofa. You know, Davenport is also a term that is used not just for an antique or a piece of furniture to sit on. It is also a desk. Mm-hmm. So if you Google Davenport desk, you will find these wonderful walnut. They're usually mid to late Victorian with drawers on the side and a lift front, and they're beautiful pieces, and they're still very, very collectible today. So Davenport has more than one word or one definition. So best to stick with a couch or sofa so that there's no confusion there. Good question.
Excellent. Well, thank you for clearing that up.
My pleasure.
Well, all right, Mark, thanks for speaking with us today on the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota.
All right. Well, I really enjoyed it, Jeff, and I'm looking forward to my visit there in May.
And we've been speaking with Mark Moran here on the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota for Great River Regional Library branch locations, where he will be appearing during the week of May 16th. You can find it online at griver.org or link to it off of our website at kvsc.org under this story in the podcast and Untold Stories of Central Minnesota tab, where you can also find links to Mark Moran's website at www.markfmoran.com. This has been Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota is made possible through support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and has been produced at KVSC. A proud member of AMPERS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's Communities.